Adrian Lyle has been the top-ranked American dressage rider for most of the past year. She's been a member of U.S. Olympic and international championship teams for the past 13 years, coached by her longtime mentor, Debbie McDonald. Debbie's now spending most of her time with her family in Idaho. With two Grand Prix horses to compete and more coming up, Adrian is a contender for the American team at next year's World Championships. But Adrian, 40 years old, the mother of a young child, and three Olympics to her name, is competing only a developing small tour horse in this week's National Championships. Instead, she'll be wearing her coach's hat, helping two Grand Prix combinations in the Dudacorp headline event, one in the Brentina Cup under 25 division, one in developing Grand Prix, and one in the 7-year-old horse class. Adrian talked to Dressage News about her coaching and competition lives.
Tell me about your, when did you actually start training, and how has it become something that is obviously a significant part of your career right now?
Yeah, I started actually in the United States Pony Club, which I have to give a huge credit for, because teaching is such a part of their program. You know, the older kids, your kids, you're involved in clinics to help you understand how to teach, not what to teach necessarily, but how to teach. And I think that is where I started doing at a pretty young age and figured out that I enjoyed that a lot. I enjoyed trying to figure out how to explain things and make sense to the riders. And so obviously at a very low level and backyard kind of stuff. But I did start doing that quite early on. And then as my career advanced and I kind of went into the high performance stuff, the teaching evolved with it, and the clients and the students that I had evolved more towards those with high performance international goals like myself.
Right. Well, I noticed that, for example, at the for the Festival of Champions, you have two in the Grand Prix, one in the under 25, one in developing Grand Prix, one 7-year-old. Plus, you're riding, of course, developing pre-St. George for yourself. That's quite a quite a handful.
It is, and it makes me quite proud to hear it all listed like that. That's pretty cool, I have to say. Yeah, it's been just I feel so fortunate that the teaching has been able to evolve inside my career, and now it's all. I've enjoyed teaching everyone. I've enjoyed teaching amateurs, children, everything. But at the moment, I'm really enjoying having all the riders that are focused on, you know, this is their career, this is their passion, this is their focus in life. And I really relate with that. And so it's just a really fun energy to be around like-minded people who are so driven and such dedicated students of this sport.
Of course, you worked with Debbie McDonald for 2 decades.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that affected what you're doing now?
Oh, tremendously. I mean, she is my role model. You know, I learned from, like you said, from 20 years of riding with her and absorbing everything. She learned, of course, from many people, but influencer in her career was Klaus Falkenhall. So I think there's kind of been these ideas that have been passed through generations and shaped a little bit, but all fundamentally along the same principles. And so I like to hope that I'm able to carry her teachings forward.
When you say similar, obviously classical dressage, what's the difference between when you started working with Debbie, and of course at that stage she was working with Klaus Falkenhall, to now, because the horses are different. There are a lot of differences that are very apparent. But what do you see as the differences?
I do think the horses are very different, and I think that has to be taken into account. You know, we're riding different animals than we were 20, 30 years ago. But what I always give a huge credit to Klaus and to Debbie for was that, you know, maybe don't call before your time necessarily, but it was always a horse first, welfare centered, very kind training approach. Before that was kind of brought to the forefront, I would say, of the social license and all of that, they were very true to those principles. And so I was fortunate to have grown up in such a system that taught you that that can and should be done that way and exactly how to do that. And then as far as how it's evolved, I think I always feel like with every horse I train, I learn a little something else, you know. So you are a collection of the horses you have trained in your life. And so Debbie passed on the knowledge from the horses she'd trained. And then the more that I've trained over the years, I feel like I'm able to learn a little bit more with each one and then pass that along to my students.
Right. And of course, you've ridden in three Olympics and many other championships. What has been the difference in your life, as distinct from sort of what you're teaching, but how has it, how do you handle these differences between being, well, from Pony Club through all the years that you spent with Debbie and competing around the world, and now you both competing and teaching?
I think it makes you... It makes me at least a better rider when I have to sit and break something down for a student and explain something. Like, so many times I will give a lesson and I'll get on my next horse and say, oh, that's exactly what I needed to be doing on this horse yesterday. Why didn't I think of that? You know, but then I sat and explained it to a student. When you're watching it, it seems so obvious. And so I do believe that teaching makes you a much better rider. And I encourage my students to get out there and teach anybody. You know, I said it's going to make you understand things so much better. And so I think it's helpful. You know, I think, like you said, it's a different hat to wear. And I'm very conscious of not trying, especially now, not to overextend myself. You know, and now we have a daughter as well. And I've got a bunch of lovely horses to compete. And so you have to be very careful with your time management. You know, I wish I could teach everyone in the world that wanted lessons, like, because I love teaching and I love sharing my knowledge, but you have to be realistic and pare it down to where you're never compromising the time that you spend on your horses that you're riding and your own, you know, training and competition goals. And so I've got it down to now, you know, a smaller core group of students, and they're very self-sufficient as well. You know, they don't need their handheld every day in a lesson, but, you know, they take one or two lessons on each horse a week, but they're very self-sufficient to keep going in between. And I think that's made a big difference.
Right. So how many horses are you riding a day?
Right now, six.
Okay. Well, like, what are those six horses right now?
We have the ones that, the Grand Prix ones, that Helix and Lars, and then we have the new stallion, 1 Million, and the new stallion, My Vitality, who's in Florida, who will fly out next week, and I'm very excited to get going with him. We have Zaun Koenig, the 7-year-old stallion, Orion, who is six. And then I have a personal horse of my own, Secret, that is just a fun project on the side.
Right.
I don't compete.
Right. That's quite a handful, though.
Oh, and, yes, and of course, Top Gun.
Yeah, of course.
Pro, right,
the one you're showing, yeah, exactly, in the
yes.
festival next week. Right. How would you describe sort of where you are with these different horses right now? I mean, obviously, one you've taken to the Olympics and the World Cup final. The other one we haven't seen much at Lars, we've not seen much of. Top Gun, we've seen you now and again in Wellington. But where are you with these different horses?
I think, you know, we have some really exciting upcoming ones. And I think, you know, some of them are still a few years off from doing the big stuff. But I think what's really exciting to me is the depth of the string that we're building. Because I think in 1, 2, 3 years, all of a sudden they're going to all kind of be riding to the top of the sport. And then we've got a group of really nice horses.
Right.
Hopefully going well.
When you say 2 to 3 years, we're talking to put it in the terms that most people are thinking of these days, Los Angeles 28.
You know, that hopefully might be ready for that, and then, you know, people are always thinking the next Olympics, but as you know well, you have to be thinking even beyond that. You know, and that's where I think it's extra exciting now, because we're looking not just to LA, but beyond LA.
Right, right. So do you think you'll have for the World Championships next year?
Well, Lars will hopefully be back, so I think that would be a viable option as well. The My Vitality one is schooling all the Grand Prix, but, you know, with horses, you have to just, I don't even have him here yet, so it's really too early to say anything about that, so...
Right, and of course you've gone through this before with like Salvino, for example, that you were very careful in developing the horse before
yes.
you started to compete, and then it had quite a long career.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. To go until 17, you know, and I think that little bit of extra patience on the front side can pay off like that, you know. And of course, you know, you want to be out there in the major championships and everything, but when you have a string and some depth like this, you know, even if that doesn't happen, you can look beyond that and say, that's okay, look what we have, you know, coming up, and look what we have for the future.
Right, right.
And we have, of course, Christian and Indian Rock, who I'm hoping will be contenders, and Katie and Vividus as well, so... It's going to be for the World Championships. It's going to be an exciting year.
Yeah, well, an exciting year next year, and also prospectively for 2028.
Mm-hmm.
So,
absolutely.
Looking at the, obviously you've now been, I remember one of the first times I ever saw you in Europe. In fact, I think it was your first time in Europe. And you spent, I think I've told you this before, that you spent hours and hours sitting there watching riders in Munich, watching primarily the Germans and the way they the way they did things, and the way you learned some lessons about what you should be doing. How much do you think the sport has changed in the United States from then, when you were still absorbing so much about the basics of the sport, to where it is now? And you've got some young riders as well as some developing riders.
Yeah, I think we've done a good, you know, our country is obviously with the horse flesh and stuff, we've been going through some ups and downs as to what's, you know, actually out there at the Grand Prix level. We had some really strong ones, you know, a few years ago that retired, and then it's kind of been a rebuilding moment these last couple of years. But I think our there's a lot more cohesive step-by-step guidance, I would say. It felt much more individualistic when I was first going over to Europe. You know, thankfully I had Debbie, who had done it all and knew it all, but it felt more like you were kind of out there on your own. And now we have these developing horse programs, emerging athletes programs, and I feel like it's a much clearer way for people to get plugged into the sport and to figure out how they should be advancing through these levels.
Right. Of course, you're now at a point in your life where you're obviously in the U.S. at the top of the sport. How do you think that sort of puts you in overall in the situation? I mean, do people look at you and say, look to you for advice on what they should be doing, aside from your day-to-day training with people?
Yeah, they do, I think. And that's, you know, it's very humbling. And for me, nothing really feels different, which is kind of funny. You get up every day, you go to the barn, you work your butt off, you go to bed. You know, I've been doing that for my whole life. So my day-to-day life doesn't feel different. But then when you step back, you know, and you realize what you have accomplished, that that people do come to you for advice and do ask for stuff. And I'm very happy to share, you know, anything I can with people.
Right, right. So the do you think obviously one of the big issues of which you have experienced is this development of horses from essentially young horses to the top of the sport. We have not for a long time been very good in a broad sense in this way. What's your sort of feeling about it?
Yeah, I think that is crucial. You know, I think that's how you get the best of the best, for sure. I think there's a lot of reasons it's challenging in our country, which we've gone into in other discussions, from cost of keeping horses here, you know, size of the country and all those things. But I think that that's really what it's all about, is learning how to develop a horse and bring a horse along. And so that's something that I try to keep at the forefront for myself, but also for my students as well. This is not a show up, your horse is tacked up, you ride for 45 minutes and go home kind of program.
Right.
Anyone that rides with me, it's about all the management, the vet care, the daily management of the horse, the training, the long-term philosophy, you know, all the parts that make a difference. It's so much more than just the lesson time and the time in the saddle. You know, that's a small percentage of what makes or breaks it. And honestly, most of it happens outside of the saddle.
Right, right. When you say most of it happens outside of the saddle, you mean you just thinking about what you should be doing and taking care of the horse, or what?
Yeah, planning, you know, their physical health, their mental health, planning their training program, a competition, a strategy, as well as treating yourself as an athlete. You know, how do you physically stay so that you're the best rider you can be? How do you stay symmetrical so that you train up a young horse that is symmetrical, you know, because our flaws transfer over to them. And it's really looking at the holistic picture of all the little parts that go into it, and not just thinking that it's what happens when you hop on your horse and, you know, ride for 45 minutes.
Right.
That's an important part of it, but that will never be enough.
There was a period of which you were very much a part of it, where there were several riders, Casey Perry Glass, Laura Graves, of course, Stefan, where we were really at the very top of the sport. And of course, we're not, most of those horses are now retired, so that's just the nature of the beast. How can we sort of not go through this again, where we have from a real high, historically high, to essentially not so great?
I think, like you touched on, the process of bringing up the young horses, because I think those partnerships are what really, really shine and go to the top levels. Knowing, and then with that being said, you have to be realistic and understand not every young horse is going to be a Grand Prix horse. And I think it's incorrect to assume that every horse should be a Grand Prix horse. I think you're setting some horses up to be pushed too hard, perhaps physically or mentally. It's just not their... not easy for them. They're not the ones that are going to excel in it. And so for that reason, you have to have a certain amount of numbers. You can't have one top rider go out and buy one young horse and wait 8 years for them to train it, because there's a lot of stuff that can go awry along the way. And if you find that, you know what, they're not, this isn't what they love, they don't have the desire to be a Grand Prix horse, move them along as a lovely amateur horse, or move them along as a lovely small tour horse, and let them go to a place where they will shine at what they're capable of. But that being said, then you've got to have enough to choose from that you're bringing along, that hopefully one or two of those ends up having all the qualities to make it to the top.
What stage do you think the United States is at right now?
Meaning what?
Well, as you said, some horses are not going to make it and some are going to make it. I'm not asking specifically which horses, because obviously... there are individual riders, but how do you think, you know, every year we go through some pretty intense months in Florida and Southern California, and that sort of tends to set the tone for the rest of the year. And now, as we have the World Championships in a year's time, where do you think the United States stands right now or will in this time next year?
I think we're up obviously against some very stiff competition. You know, if you just look at the scores, it's no secret. But we also have really good riders in our country, you know, so hopefully they can rise to the occasion. You know, it's hard to make an exact prediction, but we do have good upcoming horses and riders. You know, whether will they be ready in time for next year, that all remains to be seen. But I think even beyond that, it would be great if all of our riders who wanted to have, you know, Olympic aspirations and were capable of doing it and have proven they can do it, I think it would be great if we saw more young horses coming up with them, so that they weren't just relying on, you know, one successor to their current horse. So that's not an easy situation to make happen, for sure. But I do think that that's going to be the way eventually.
Right. And of course, the thing is that while the World Championships are vitally important for the U.S., because we're already qualified for Los Angeles,
it's
not that critical.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean,
So I think, you know, I don't know the strategy, obviously, of the those in charge, but I would think that at least takes a little pressure off from saying, oh, we have to secure a certain spot, and maybe opens it up a little bit more to gaining experience for horses that we think could be LA candidates.
Right. Of course, the horses that you're looking at right now, you've got the, as you say, you've had Helix and Lars and then Top Gun that you're showing in the developing pre-St. George. How far along is Top Gun towards Grand Prix?
He's one that has come along slowly, and he's one that really you have to just read him and go at your own time. So he's playing with some of the stuff from the Grand Prix, but I think we're still a year off or so, and he's one that you just have to give the time to. He's a big moving horse. He takes a long time to gain his strength, so he'll tell me.
Yeah, right.
I don't tell him anything. He tells me.
Right. And of course, how is Indian Rock doing?
He's doing great. That horse is just such an incredible joy to have in the program and to be able to work with. And Christian is such a sympathetic, careful rider on him. I'm beyond thrilled with how that partnership has come together so quickly.
Right. I think most people are sort of not necessarily surprised, but very it's looking pretty, it makes people feel pretty good, I think, to see what's happening.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I mean, you know he's a talented horse, and Christian's a talented rider, but, you know, Christian has limited Grand Prix experience, and stallions can be finicky and tricky, and so, you know, you don't really know until you get all the parts together and see how it comes together, and so it's been very, very pleasant, very exciting, and really happy with how that's going.
Right. And, of course, the putting aside the national championships, the circuit next winter is really what will do, because they're all international judges, so that will be significant, I guess. So, what do you think about?
As far as for the
just leading up to the World Championships.
Yeah, I think it always starts to come into focus pretty clearly, and what's always important to watch is not just the score average, but really the trajectory, you know, which horse and rider are gaining confidence and growing, you know, in performance each time they go in, because from the Florida season to the World Championships, there's still a chunk of time there. So if you have a horse and rider really on the upward trajectory, you know, those are the ones that you want to pay attention to.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ben. Sorry, I
do have one final question.
Yes.
What do you actually prefer to do? Do you prefer to be riding, or do you prefer to be training, or what?
I love both. If I couldn't ride, I would be very sad and cranky. So for sure, riding. The couple months I didn't ride when I was pregnant, I was just miserable to be around. I felt sorry for everyone. So I learned I have to ride every day. But that being said, I don't need to be in the saddle 12 hours a day. You know, that's also not great for your body for longevity. So I'm very happy with the mix now, riding, you know, riding two-thirds of the day and then getting to teach great students on great horses for the other third. I think I would need both in my life to really feel fulfilled, because I love the teaching part as well, and I love being able to bring people along on a journey with you. You know, they understand all everything that goes into it, the highs and the lows. You've been there and done it, and now you get to experience someone else going through that whole process, and that's really special.
And how does it, like, when you hold the hand of somebody, essentially, when they're things are not going so well for them, because it doesn't always go well.
Which is
a lot of the time. Yeah, right.
Go on. Well, I think that's part of, you know, anyone who's done high-level competitions and Olympic Games and World Championships, you know, from the outside, it might always look like a smooth, you know, smooth walk in the park with pretty Instagram stories. And then, you know, down center line you go. And in reality, it's very seldom, if ever, a smooth ride. You know, there's ups and downs, there's challenges you didn't think were going to happen. And, you know, once you've kind of gone through that yourself, I'm hoping I can be a bit of a hand-holding, supportive, you know, I've been there, don't worry, it's going to be okay, you know, guiding people through. And I think that means a lot, because there's so much more that goes into it than just being able to ride a good test. It's all, like we talked about earlier, that outside management and controlling all those other variables.
Right, right. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ken.
Okay. Good luck.
All right. Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye.